Tomorrow's Ash Wednesday. Enjoy it. It's 11 o'clock. KOIN, Portland.
CBS News. A good day in the Massachusetts primary for Senator Henry Jackson and for President Ford. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Surprising some of the experts, Senator Jackson won the Massachusetts Democratic primary, coming out on top in a crowded field of eight major candidates. With 80% of the precincts reporting, Jackson has 23% of the vote. George Wallace is in second place with 18%, but close behind is Morris Udall with 17%. Jimmy Carter is in fourth place with 14%. Finishing at the bottom of the list of eight was Indiana Senator Birch Bayh, who was called a meeting with his people Wednesday, and hence he may drop out of the race. On the Republican side, President Ford was the clear winner over Ronald Reagan, the president getting 61% of the GOP vote in Massachusetts. Reagan got 36%. The president also won in Vermont, where the results of the primary are not binding on convention delegates. On the Democratic side, Jimmy Carter came out on top with 46%. Sergeant Shriver was second with 31%. More on the primary in a moment.
The most successful selling cold medicine in the world is a little capsule. It's Contac. It contains no ingredients for aches and fever, no cough medicine, yet gives you longer relief per dose than any pill, any liquid. Full-time 24-hour relief of your sneezing, drips, and congestion. Contac. Its tiny time pills contain ingredients to work up to 12 hours. That's longer relief per dose from those symptoms than any pill, any liquid. So, give your cold a Contac. All day, all night. Full time. Use only as directed.
Some political experts say school busing was an important issue in the Massachusetts primary. The two top Democratic vote-getters, Henry Jackson and George Wallace, campaigned as opponents of mandatory school busing for racial balance. After his win Tuesday night, Jackson was asked about the busing issue.
I've tried to play the role of the rational candidate on the busing issue and stated honestly what I thought the issues were and say, let's really do something about integration. And I've practiced that with my own family and sending them to integrated schools. And with a 100% civil rights record, I thought someone with a lifelong record, not just 10 years, but 35 years of voting for civil rights measures, someone ought to speak honestly on this issue, and I thought I had an opportunity to do it. I refused to cross the line.
But Jackson insists it was economic issues, especially jobs, that got him his win in Massachusetts. Third place finisher Morris Udall assesses the results of the Massachusetts primary this way.
I always thought this would be a long-distance steeplechase, and we're about where I thought we'd be. My main goal here in New Hampshire and Massachusetts, where we finished strongly 2 weeks in a row, was to emerge as the front runner, the progressive wing of the party. And tonight I am the front runner, the progressive front runner, and that's where I wanted to be.
Udall finished ahead of Liberals Bayh, Harris, and Shriver. Tuesday was a good day in the primary for President Ford. He came out strongly in front of Ronald Reagan in both Vermont and Massachusetts. White House News Secretary Ron Nesson had this statement.
The president is pleased by the outcome in Massachusetts and Vermont. He wants to thank the voters and those who worked in his campaign for their support. Today's victories in Massachusetts and Vermont and last week's victory in New Hampshire indicate the momentum is swinging in the president's favor. The president looks forward to the Florida primary next week.
Nesson said the results show the momentum is swinging in the president's favor. A deputy sheriff was killed and 12 other persons injured too critically when an explosion ripped through the Mason County Courthouse and Jail in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, late Tuesday. Among the injured were Mason County Sheriff Pete Wedge, six other officers, and five prisoners. By a narrow margin of 17-16, the House Judiciary Committee has voted to send back a gun control bill to subcommittee that appears to end any chance of a new gun control law being enacted this year. Now this.
This is a message to some very special people. They're special people because even though they may feel fine, they're dying. They're people who have high blood pressure and aren't treating it seriously. If you are one of these people, take a few seconds to listen to some statistics. They may help you add years to your life. Insurance companies have found the higher your blood pressure is, the more years you can subtract from your life. For example, if your blood pressure is 140 over 95, subtract 9 years from your life. And if it's 150 over 100, you could die 16 years too early. Here are a few more numbers to think about. If you don't treat your high blood pressure, chances are 3 times greater that you'll have a stroke, and almost 5 times greater that you'll suffer from congestive heart failure. But you can lead a longer and healthier life if you treat your high blood pressure seriously. See your doctor. Get back on your treatment. Treat your high blood pressure and live. A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The White House has announced that King Juan Carlos and Queen Sofia of Spain will make an official visit to the United States June 2nd and 3rd. Officials say the visit and planned meetings between the King and President Ford underscores U.S. attachment to close and harmonious relations with Spain. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
In Radio 97 News, Governor Straub has some good news for Oregon's unemployed. The governor launched a plan to help the state's economy and put some jobless Oregonians back to work. The program is called Jobs Now. And Straub says the goal for the first month of the program is placing 6,000 unemployed Oregonians in new jobs. The governor is urging creation of a new partnership between government and private industry. A tanker that ran aground on a reef near the Hawaiian Islands has been towed across the Pacific Ocean to the Port of Portland's Swan Island Ship Repair Yard. The SS Austin was carrying a load of refined petroleum when she ran aground. Spokesmen say this extensive repair work to the ship's hull will require a large volume of steel, and it should take about 2 months to complete. BPA Administrator Don Hodell told a congressional subcommittee in Washington today the Bonneville Power Administration is investigating the possibility of extending its sale of electricity to the Southwest. Hodell said the amount of power marketed to the Northwest has been limited by the capacity of existing transmission lines. Portland house painter William Mackey came home tonight 16 years after being ordered deported during the Cold War years of the early 1950s. Mackey allegedly attended meetings of a communist front organization in his youth. The 67-year-old Mackey returned from exile in his native Finland. When he walked down the airport ramp, he was not recognized by his two sisters and niece there to greet him, but they rushed to embrace him when he was pointed out. Mackey told a news conference, "Let bygones be bygones. I'm ready to start all over again." And as he puts it, "I'd like to go into the woods for a while and just relax. I have no regrets or hard feelings." Lane County's district attorney says 5 young people have been arrested in what he termed the largest food stamp fraud case in Oregon. Attorney Pat Horton says the case involved more than $12,000 in fraudulently obtained and used stamps, and he says more arrests are expected in the 10-week-old investigation. Weather forecast. The whole one reads thusly, fair nights and sunny days through Thursday, lows Wednesday morning and Wednesday night 25 to 30, highs Wednesday and Thursday in the upper 40s, and the chance of measurable rain is near zero through Wednesday night. I can't see the thermometer. It's cold outside. I'm Tom Morgan. Stay in touch with 97 News.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall, bringing you, hopefully, an enjoyable shudder. Certainly, fans of the occult like the dark and dangerous tales we spin because of the vicarious enjoyment that comes from the delicious shivers of the supernatural. But let me issue a warning to all you ghost lovers. Do not, I repeat, do not ever make the mistake of thinking that ghosts are fun. Mrs. Mary Boyne and her husband did, and this tale tells what happened to them.
I stood at the library windows of the beautiful old house of Ling and peered out in the gathering dusk, and I saw a figure. For a moment, a shudder ran through me. I thought I'd spotted the elusive ghost of Ling. And when the figure entered the library, I gasped.
What's the trouble, Mary?
Would you believe it, Ned? I mistook you for our elusive ghost.
Oh, Mary. Mary, we've had a great marriage up till now, and my problems stem from America and not from any crazy old ghost.
Oh.
And if you'll forget the ghost, we'll all be a lot happier.
Mystery drama Afterward was adapted from the Edith Wharton classic, especially for the Mystery Theater, by Murray Burnett, and stars Celeste Holm. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and all state insurance companies. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. The touch to height you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
You seem to be in a hurry, sir.
Yes, I am.
You are in a hurry.
Oh, yes.
Well, no doubt you're rushing down to buy a Buick Electra because you know that Electra has the kind of ride and comfort Buick's famous for.
That's right.
And because you know it's America's second largest selling full-size luxury car.
You got it.
So you're hurrying because you want to get there before the Electras are all gone.
That's very good. How did you know I was going to buy a Buick Electra?
Well, it was on the shopping list you dropped back there. You see, dozen eggs, quarter milk, Buick Electra.
Son of a gun, I forgot the pistachio nuts.
That's not on the list.
Well, I forgot them anyhow.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. The book of Job says this about dreams. God speaks first in one way and then in another, but no one notices. He speaks in dreams and visions that come in the night. When slumber comes on mankind and all men are asleep in bed, then it is He whispers in the ear of man, or may frighten him with fearful sights and turn him away from evil doing to save his soul from the pit. So listen to your dreams. They could guide you to new and positive directions. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Remember the phrase, Kilroy was here, so popular back in the days of World War II? I feel certain most of you remember, but if we go back a few years farther, how many of you recall the phrase, the little man who wasn't there? What do all these phrases have to do with our tale? Well, stretching a point, we might say that our story concerns the ghost that wasn't there, or at least not when you expected him. If this sounds confusing, let's listen to the lady whose story it is.
My name is Mary Boyne. My address is Suite 357 in a wood, Dorsetshire, England. Of course, I'm American. And alone and sane. The reason I mention sanity is because they call this place a rest home, but actually it's a place for people who have money and who are supposed to be not quite right in the head. I told you I'm sane, but I must confess it's difficult to understand how I managed to retain my sanity after what happened. But you be the judge and jury. I'll start at the beginning, back in America, in a little town of Waukesha, and the little house where I lived happily with Ned. Ned, you're home early.
You bet. I'm not only home early, darling, but I'm home for good. I've sold the Blue Star Mine for $5 million.
Oh.
Mary, my love, are you all right?
Oh, yes, fine, darling, but you're joking.
Never more serious. We're finished with drudgery, darling. Finished living in this house, in this town. And don't even bother to pack. Let's just make our dream come true today.
Oh!
I know that Americans are often impulsive, generous, and even, forgive me, sometimes a trifle foolish. But I must say, Mr. and Mrs. Boyne. You are something new in my experience as a realtor.
Well, is that a nice English way of saying you don't have a suitable house horse?
Not at all, Mr. Boyne.
Oh, please forgive my husband, Mrs. Stair, but our search for a house in England is the answer to what both he and I have always considered an impossible dream. You see, I was born in England, and I went to America as a child, and I've always wanted to return, and now we can.
Is it so strange that we want a house we ourselves can remodel and modernize?
No, that's understandable. But to be so far from any means of transportation.
Perhaps I should say that Ned and I are really looking for two things. To get away from our old lifestyle in America and to find our roots.
Yes, I have a house that seems to be made to order for your specifications. It's been on the market for years because it needs so much remodeling, and it's 14 miles from the nearest rail station.
Great, great.
Let me finish. It was built in the time of the Tudors.
Oh.
Needs a tremendous amount of modernization, particularly in the matter of heating and hot water.
Sounds super to me. But how about a ghost, Mrs. Stair?
Oh, Dorsetshire's full of ghosts.
That's nice. But I did so want one of my own, you know, right on the premises.
Mrs. Boyne, you shouldn't ask for anything like that. There is a traditional ghost that goes along with the house. A particularly nasty ghost. Ghosts are a rather strange one.
Strange? How so?
Because the history of the ghost of your house at Ling is that no one knows that they've seen a ghost until long afterward.
Well, that's crazy.
What in the world makes a ghost, except for the fact that you know when you see it? It either moans or wears white shrouds or touches you with icy fingers.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that there are stories about the ghost of Ling, and every single one of them is identical. The person who sees the ghost doesn't know it's a ghost until afterward.
Oh, forget it, Mary. No, life is too short to enjoy a ghost. You've got to wait to find out if it's a real ghost or not. No, but this house at Ling seems to have so much else going for it. Darling, I think we really should take a look at it.
We went, we looked, and we were conquered. Both Ned and I fell instantly in love with Ling. It was a lovely old Tudor house, just as the agent had described it. Exactly what we'd both dreamed of, and it was definitely secluded. We bought it and moved in. But although I was in seventh heaven and up to my ears in planning for remodeling the old house, there was something definitely wrong with Ned.
Oh, these powders don't do a thing for my headaches.
But the doctor said...
I know what the doctor said, darling, and I followed his prescription, but I still have the headaches.
Darling,
mm-hmm.
Do you think perhaps we've made a mistake about this house?
No, Ling is perfect. Perfect. We both knew it the moment we saw it. The gardens are a delight, and under your tender, loving care, grow more beautiful every day.
Oh, with Hilton's great help.
Nonsense. No, Hilton is a good gardener, darling, but he hasn't your green thumb. No, my love. The house is perfect, and there's absolutely nothing wrong. These headaches will go away in time.
So you're not going to tell me?
Dear heart, there is nothing to tell.
But I knew better. Something was very wrong, and I intended to find out what it was. Lydia Westlake was the village librarian, and had been ever since the oldest inhabitant could remember.
Why, Mrs. Boyne, what a pleasure. Is there anything I can do for you?
Miss Westlake, I really must apologize for not coming to see you in this lovely old library before.
Oh, my dear, no apologies necessary. Everyone in town knows how busy you've been patching up Ling.
Well, that's one reason I'm here. To ask if you have any books about the history of Ling.
Ah, you mean about the architecture?
Not exactly. The whole, everything. Maybe even something about the ghost.
Well, I really shouldn't say this, but it's best for everyone to try to forget about the Ling ghost. Oh, believe me.
Oh, I believe you, Miss Westlake, but I'm still interested in everything about Ling.
Well, very well. You'll find some books on the history of Ling under G226.
There were three books. I took them all and went back to Ling and started to read. Two incidents mentioned the Ling ghost, and they were absolutely horrifying. What I hadn't told the librarian was that I wanted to find out more about the ghost because of the way Ned was acting.
Who the devil is it?
Well, it's me, darling.
I'm sorry, Mary. It's just that I'm, well, I'm sorry.
Have the servants been interrupting you?
No. Oh, gosh, we've never kept secrets from each other. It's my consultation work with the Blue Star Mine back in the States.
But why in the world should that be so disturbing?
Well, there were some problems I hadn't expected.
But I've never seen you like this. Is there any chance we'll have to go back to America?
No. It's nothing like that. It's just that there's a troublemaker who's after me. Darling, tell me how you're coming with the house and your research on the ghost.
I don't want to hear anything more about that ghost.
Well, why this sudden about face?
I just don't, that's all. Let's make a pact. You stop worrying, and I'll stop talking about the ghost. The pact didn't work. Oh, how I wish it had. Perhaps things would not have turned out the way they did. If we had left Ling, and I had listened to my presentiment about the Ling ghost, Ned grew more irritable, and I ever more frightened.
What's the matter with those fools back in Waukesha? They can't handle the simplest matters without asking me a million questions.
Ned, why don't you give up the consulting job? Oh. We don't really need it. I mean, do we?
No, not the money, but in a way, we do need it.
I don't understand.
Well, it's a complicated business, Mary, involving lawyers and a lot of legal matters that would only bore you.
Bore me? I'd rather be bored or sad or anything. If only I could see you more relaxed.
Well, you will. You will, darling. It'll just take a little time.
Time for what?
Well, I have problems with the Blue Star. So, look, why don't you bring me up to date on your ghost, huh?
Oh, Ned, because I'm frightened. I read a story in one of those books I took from the library about the young wife of the son of the man who built Ling.
Oh, and what about it?
Well, it seems she had fallen madly in love with one of the men here before she met the Ling son. And, oh, Ned, must I?
Well, please, darling, it can't be all that shocking now in this day and age.
Well, she disposed of an unwanted child and kept it a secret.
Oh?
Some years later, after she was happily married and had a little girl of her own, she was out strolling through these gardens one day when she met an absolutely enchanting young girl, just about her daughter's age. They all hit it off very well, and soon the three became friends. The only thing was that they couldn't ever figure out where this enchanting child lived or who were her parents. And this began to worry the young mistress of Ling, until one day her daughter disappeared and was never found or seen again.
Well, I don't understand.
Don't you? The mother did. She had seen the ghost of Ling, her daughter's little friend. The ghost was the illegitimate child she'd killed. Only she didn't know till afterward.
I'm sorry, Mary, for making you tell me that story.
It's all right. There's more in those old books. There's something about a secret staircase.
Oh?
I should be able to locate it. You get a marvelous bird's eye view of the entire country.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Why don't you help me search for it?
Ah, can't. I have to work on my correspondence, but if and when you find it, give me a shout. I'll be in the library.
I set off on another exploration of Ling, but this time with a purpose. And finally, just like a heroine in some gothic novel, I pressed a panel of the old wainscoting in one of the rooms, and it slid back, revealing a small circular flight of stairs leading up. I climbed the tiny corkscrew staircase to the roof of Ling. Oh, the book hadn't exaggerated the beauty of the view. I called excitedly down the stairs, Ned! Ned! I found it, and it's beautiful! Come up here and see!
Wow. Oh, darling, this is really something. Why, you can see for miles. How did you find it?
Just followed the directions in the book. Went around pressing the paneling, and suddenly there it was. The staircase. Just look. Of course, I know you can see farther than I can.
Oh, but darling, your eyes are more beautiful. Hello. Oh, who's there?
Who? That's where.
Well, can't you see that man coming towards the house? I've got to go down and see who it is.
Ned! Ned! Wait for me! There you are, darling. I've been looking all over for you.
Well, I've been right here in the library.
Well, you dashed off that roof and went running out the front door. Who was it?
Who was what?
The man you saw coming towards you in the garden.
Oh, that man. Well, you see, dear, I thought I saw the gardener, and I ran after him to tell him about some of the drains which need tending. But, you see, he disappeared before I reached him.
Disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to be walking so slowly and toward the house, not away from it.
Well, that's the way it seemed to me, too. But, I guess, we must have been wrong. Unless it could have been, the ghost.
Now, we all know there are no such things as ghosts, or at least some of us know. But one thing we would all agree upon is that if there really are ghosts, they won't go away even if you don't mention them. I'll be back shortly with more mention and more answers to the mysterious ghost of Ling.
Cold medicines. Choose. The green liquid you take every 4 hours when confined to home or at bedtime. That's 4 hours relief per dose. Or give your cold a contact. Contact's different. Just one capsule works up to 12 hours, all through the day and all through the night. Contact doesn't have ingredients for pain and cough like the liquid. And just one contact gives you as long relief from sneezing, drips, and congestion as 3 doses of the liquid. The tiny time pills do it. Now, for all day and all night relief, what'll you choose? Stay home with your cold or take contact?
Give your cold to contact.
Use only as directed.
Okay, I made a mistake. My first mistake. But they say guys like me coming out of jail usually wind up coming right back.
I like sitting in the park, but not every day. I want to do something useful. People around here, though, they think you're over 65. You're useless.
The man crossed and shoot. Who are you kidding, girl? You're nowhere unless you can read.
Tough problems call for real solutions, not just talk. If your community has a problem, you need action. Action is skilled volunteers of all ages working together to help solve tough community problems. Write Action, Department Q, Washington, D.C., 20525. Between us, there's got to be a solution.
This is a public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
Institutions for the mentally ill have come a long way. They are quite beautiful and often look like an ideal retirement home. Even on the inside, where everyone wears a smile, it takes an expert to be able to see some of the anguish that lies behind the smile, like the pain that continually racks Mary Boyne.
None of the staff nor the guests at Innerwood Rest Home can understand why I hate to hear the sound of the postman's whistle when he comes with the mail. They think it's because I have no one who cares enough to write to me. Well, it's true that I have no one, but the reason I dread the postman's whistle is because if it weren't for the postman and the mail and... There I am, confusing you again. But it all relates to one arrival of the mail at Ling.
Oh, this is from old Joe Sitwell asking how we are, and this one's for you.
I'm so glad there are no letters to disturb you. What's this?
Let me see.
It's a newspaper clipping. Front page article from the Waukesha Sentinel.
Oh?
It says
that a man named Elwell has brought a lawsuit against you. That there was something wrong about the Blue Star Mine. I haven't read it all, but...
darling, you wouldn't understand more than half of it, even if you finished.
Well, maybe not. But now I understand what it is that's been bothering
you.
No,
it's really nothing, darling.
Nothing? On the front page of the Sentinel? Ned, what's this all about?
Oh, now why don't we have some tea first?
This lawsuit isn't new to you.
No. No, of course not. I've known about it for some time.
Of course you have, and you've been having sleepless nights and headaches for some time. What does this man accuse you of?
Oh, pretty nearly everything he could dream up.
Why? Why would a man do that?
Oh, because he figures he can make some money.
But surely he must have some reason. There must be something he thinks you've done.
All right. All right, darling, I'll tell you the whole story. Mary, dear, you must know that whenever a fortune is made overnight, there are always some envious people who believe they deserve a share of the windfall, and that's exactly what Elwell thinks.
Who is Elwell? I don't know that name.
Well, he's a man I put in to the Blue Star. He made some money, and now he wants more.
How did you put him into it?
Well, he brought me the samples to be assayed, and, well, I told you about it at the time, but I didn't make a big deal out of it in case they proved to be worthless.
I think I'm big... But if everything is the way you say, and you paid him...
Well, of course I paid him.
Well, then why does he sue you now?
Oh, well, probably because some lawyer got hold of him and talked him into it, hoping for a fat fee. Or maybe he thought I'd get scared. Now, Bob Elwell ought to have known me better than that.
I certainly agreed with that. Anyone did business with Ned would know he wasn't the sort to be frightened of anything. But there was no question that he was worried. And I was hardly surprised when he turned to me one night and said...
Darling, have you any idea how long it's supposed to be before you know whether or not you've seen the Ling ghost?
Why, no. None. Have you?
No. No, of course not.
It's a rather an odd question to ask me, darling, unless you think you have seen the ghost.
Well, I really don't know why I asked the question. It just popped into my head, and so I asked it.
I know your engineer's mind, Ned. And I know how it worries and worries about a problem until you've solved it. Now, I want you to tell me something on your solemn word of honor. Promise.
Okay, my word of honor.
That you believe you have seen the Ling ghost, and that you're trying to keep it from me, and that's what's worrying you?
Cross my heart, darling. I don't think I've seen the Ling ghost. At least, not to my knowledge, because according to the ancient tradition, one really doesn't know when he's seen the ghost.
And with that, I had to be satisfied. I knew my husband. There was no more to be gained from questioning him. But I thought to myself, maybe there was something to be gained from questioning the ghost. That is, if I could manage to locate the elusive spirit. Of course, I knew that you weren't supposed to be able to know you'd seen the ghost, but I was haunted by the idea of the disappearing figure we'd seen from the rooftop. So once again, I climbed the small secret stairway and stood on the roof ledge. I cupped my hands and shouted to the sky, "Oh, spirit, specter, shadow, whatever you choose to call yourself, we've done you no harm. We want to live here in peace. Oh, ghost of Ling, break with the past. Break with tradition and show yourself to me."
Mary, what on earth do you think you're doing?
That's obvious, isn't it, darling?
Well, if you mean you're making a darn fool of yourself and, incidentally, of me, yes.
Well, I'm sorry if I was stupid.
It isn't stupidity, Mary. It's just this obsession of yours with a ghost. You're only adding to my worries.
I don't want that. You know I don't want that.
Well, then maybe we should leave Ling.
Oh, but I love this house, and so do you.
Well... but I think there's something else we have to do, and let's get right on with it.
Ned was just trying to help me, like the staff here at Innerwood. And he thought maybe by arranging a seance with a reputable and respected medium might put my mind at rest. Ned thought that perhaps the medium might be able to get through and reach the ghost.
Now, you both understand that as a man of integrity, I can promise you nothing?
Yes, Mr. Woods, you've already made that very clear.
It is difficult to overemphasize the possibility of failure.
Can we start, please?
Please be patient, Mrs. Boyne. All the research I have done on the ghost of Ning seems to bear out the tradition. He or she appears, and only afterwards do the people realize they have made contact with a ghost.
Yes, we know all that, but isn't it also true that there's never been an attempt to reach this ghost through a reputable medium?
That is so.
Well, that's why we came to you. I want to find out if there is a ghost of Ling, and if there is, you should be able to reach him.
I should, but... As I said...
Please, let's not go through all that again. Let's hope you will succeed.
Right. Now, this is our first seance.
Ah, well, I'm afraid it is very much like what you have read in books and heard about. We would keep this room dimly candlelit, just as it is now. And so, I ask you to join hands with me. Ah, that is it. Now... Close your eyes and concentrate.
On what?
On the ghost.
But I want...
Just think of the ghost, Mrs. Boyne. If there is any communication, it must come through me.
Is it over now?
It is over, yes.
Well, you said you might fail.
I did not fail.
But we didn't see or hear a thing. Did you, Ned?
Oh, nothing.
I pierced the veil. I reached my control.
Well, then what...
You said you thought I was an expert. And I believe I convinced you that I am not a fake.
Well, okay, but if you reach...
Let me assure you... that there is no spirit, no ghost, happy or unhappy, inhabiting these premises at Ling.
Ned,
Tell
me, did you believe Mr. Woods?
Well, darling, he's supposed to be the best, and he said there definitely wasn't any ghost at Ling.
Hey. Something's happened to you.
What?
It's happened since the seance.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're different.
Oh, come on, Mary.
Maybe something did happen at that seance.
What?
I mean, those drawn lines in your face have disappeared. Smiles come back into your eyes.
Oh.
You slept better last night. Come on, admit it.
All right, I admit that. But it has nothing to do with the seance.
Well, then what caused the change?
Well... Perhaps it was a cable I received yesterday saying that I could probably expect some very good news about that Elwell suit very shortly.
Then it was the lawsuit that bothered you after all.
Yeah, well, yes, perhaps more than I knew. Well, at any rate, we'll find out with tomorrow's mail.
Has the mail come yet?
No, not yet, darling. Anyway, I thought you were going to be all taken up with that engineer from Dorsetshire who's going to show us how to install a hot water system.
Well, I'm looking forward to his visit, but I remember what you said about the mail.
Oh, there's the postman now, dear. Yeah, let me beat you to it, Mary.
We'll go together.
All right. Ah, here we are. Oh, airmail special from Waukesha.
What does it say? Open it.
All right. Good news, darling.
You mean you've won? You've won the lawsuit?
Oh, the suit's been withdrawn, so there's nothing to worry about.
Then everything's all right.
Oh, couldn't be righter. Now, how about giving me a kiss, and you go wait for that engineer.
One of the strangest things I remember was my total sense of security as Ned held me in his arms. I left Ned and walked out into the gardens. Oh, the day was beautiful. It seemed even brighter than it actually was because of the change in Ned. As I walked along the flagstones, I heard footsteps behind me. I stopped and turned.
I came to see Mr. Boyne.
I'm Mrs. Boyne. Do you have an appointment with my husband?
I think he expects me.
Well, he's working on a book, so he never sees anyone in the morning.
Oh.
Wait. You seem tired. Have you come a long way?
Yes, I have come a long way.
Well, then I suppose if you'll go to the house, my husband will see you. You'll find him in the library. It's that way. I watched the stranger enter the house, and then I went to find the gardener, and soon the engineer arrived. And the morning just sped by. We'd finished with the plans for the hot water system, and it was time for lunch. I went to the dining room, but Ned wasn't at the table. Nor was he in the library. I remember calling and calling, and then asking the servants whether they'd seen him. But Ned was nowhere to be found. Not at the luncheon, not in the garden, not in the house. He didn't come back that afternoon, nor was he there for dinner. By that time, I was frantic and called the police. The local police shook their heads and called in Scotland Yard.
Now, Mrs. Bourne, I can only try to reassure you by telling you that we haven't found your husband's body.
Well, that's very reassuring, Inspector. You're telling me my husband has just disappeared into thin air, vanished without a trace?
Oh, no, ma'am. What I'm trying to say is that if there was any foul play, and in these cases sometimes there is, we usually find the body of the dead man within 48 hours. So perhaps I was clumsy, but I was trying to tell you that there is hope that Mr. Boyne is alive.
Well, then where is he?
Oh, of course, I can't answer that question for you at this time. But I promise you, Mrs. Boyne, all the resources of Scotland Yard will be employed to find him for you.
Oh. I must admit the inspector kept his word. And also kept my hopes alive. The yard kept me up to date on every development. But alas, there were so pitifully few. They did nothing to nourish my hope that my darling Ned would soon come back to me.
All the resources of Scotland Yard, will they prove to be as ineffective as all the king's men and all the king's horses in putting Humpty Dumpty together again? Or will they come up with some strange and sinister solution to the disappearance of Ned Boyne? I'll be back with the answers shortly. Allstate asks, do you own a small business? Go over these questions with your present group health and life insurance agent. If your agent doesn't say yes to every one, then
talk to the good hands people.
First question, does your present group plan cover all x-rays and lab tests other than in routine physical exams? If not,
talk to the good hands people.
Does your present group plan provide disability income protection to help replace your employees' paychecks and yours? If not,
talk to the good hands people. You're in good hands with Allstate.
See your Allstate agent to find out what an Allstate plan costs, what is and isn't covered, including benefit reductions and terms under which insurance continues in force. Allstate Insurance Companies, available in most states to businesses that qualify.
Did this ever happen to you? You see or hear an ad like this. Dining room set, only $99. But when you get to the store, they tell you, we already sold it. Or instead, they show you a set that's in really bad shape. And then they try to sell you another set for $299. This is Gene King for the Council of Better Business Bureaus. And this practice is known as bait and switch. Something is advertised for a very low price, that's the bait, and they don't intend to sell it. And then the salesman tries to sell you something more expensive, and that's the switch. Bait and switch is illegal. Don't fall for it. Here's how to protect yourself. Be suspicious of any attempt by the salesman to sell you something you're not really interested in. If the salesman refuses to show you the advertised item, take your business elsewhere. And if you have any doubts at all about making a purchase, don't sign anything until you've checked out the offer completely.
The disappearance of husbands is usually regarded by most police as a mystery with fairly obvious solutions. Most commonly, the police look for the runaway mate who's been unable to cope with a nagging wife, or, secondarily, a woman who has decided to strike out looking for a new mate by disposing of the old one. Of course, neither of these theories was even entertained for a moment by Scotland Yard in the case of the disappearance of Ned Boyne.
Now, Mrs. Boyne, we all know what a good marriage you and Mr. Boyne had, but we're momentarily at a loss.
A man just doesn't vanish off the face of the earth.
Not without leaving clues. Something that will help us find him. Now, if you don't mind, we'll just go back once more over the way you found out he was gone.
I spent most of the morning with a Mr. Loomis, an engineer from Dorsetshire, going over some plans he had for installing a hot water...
If you don't mind, I'd like to get to the stranger who asked for your husband.
Well, I've told you everything I know about him.
And told it well, ma'am. A good description. Much better than we got from Nellie, the housemaid.
She saw him too?
Oh, yes, indeed. We even found out that he wrote his name on a card he gave her.
Well, then you should know.
If I may, ma'am, let me just condense the maid's testimony from my notes here. Now, she said that the gentleman was a stranger and perhaps a foreigner. He asked for Mr. Boyne, and she asked who was calling, and then he wrote his name on a piece of paper and asked her to carry it in to your husband.
Well, didn't you ask her what Ned, my husband, said when she brought him the paper?
Well, Nellie told us your husband didn't have time to say anything, because just as she handed the paper to Mr. Boyne, she realized that the stranger had followed her into the library. She left them together.
If Nellie says that she left this stranger alone in the library with my husband, how can we be so sure that Ned left the house?
It isn't the maid's evidence we're going by, ma'am. Hilton, the gardener, swears he saw your husband leave the house by the front door, accompanied by a gentleman. And he gives a description which pretty much tallies with yours and Nellie's.
But why? Why would Ned just go off like that without a word to me or to anyone?
You've already said your husband has been worried. So if you could give us some clue as to what it was that was bothering him...
Well, I've told you about that lawsuit back in America.
But you didn't tell us about the seance and your attempts to locate the Ling ghost.
Now, surely, Inspector, you're not going to tell me that Scotland Yard is taking ghost stories seriously.
Oh, no, ma'am. But if Mr. Boyne did, it might be some explanation of his erratic behavior.
Are you telling me that you think my husband was mentally ill?
Well, now, ma'am, we need something to explain a happily married, wealthy man walking off in the middle of the morning accompanied by a stranger and so far leaving no trace.
But what about that unfinished letter you found in the library?
Obviously had to do with that business in America, which you, ma'am, assured us wasn't bothering your husband one bit.
But he did write the word safer, didn't he? Who was Parvis?
Now, we've checked, and Mr. Parvis is a perfectly respectable attorney back in Waukesha. And your husband's unfinished letter simply reads, "My dear Parvis, I have just received your letter announcing Elwell's death, and while I suppose there is now no farther risk of trouble, it might be safer..."
There. He says trouble, doesn't he?
Oh, he does indeed. And you believe that trouble could be so serious as to make him disappear without a word to you about it? Or the reason for leaving? Oh, no, we just can't believe that, Mrs. Boyne.
Then what do you believe? I mean, what has happened?
Mrs. Boyne, has your husband ever suffered from amnesia?
Never.
Does he have any medical history you could tell us about?
Ned was always healthy.
Well, England is a hard place to get lost in, ma'am. It's almost impossible for two men to slip unnoticed through or out of the country.
How about just walking?
Mrs. Boyne, we have every official means of investigation working, and we've found nothing.
And so things remained at a stalemate for the next fortnight, despite the fact that my husband's name was headlined in every newspaper and his likeness looked down into my anguished eyes from the walls of every town and village. There was still not one single word of him, and no trace of his movements. And then one morning, Nellie brought a card to me in the library with the name Edward Parvis on it, and a new hope flooded my heart.
Mrs. Boyne?
Mr. Parvis. from Waukesha. You're the attorney my husband wrote to.
Yes, I found myself here in England, and I thought I should visit you.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. You heard, of course, of my husband's disappearance, and I'm hoping that you've come to shed some light on it.
Well, I'm afraid you're in for a disappointment. My errand is of quite a different nature.
But his last unfinished letter was to you. I mean, surely...
Mrs. Boyne, is it possible you're unaware of what went on back at Waukesha?
Oh, my husband and I were very close. We had no secrets from each other.
Well, I'm wondering what you mean to do about Bob Elwell's family.
Bob Elwell's family? I'm completely confused. I don't know them. Mr. Parvis, you must bear with me. I do need your help.
And I'm almost beginning to believe you. First of all, Bob Elwell is dead. His wife's a proud woman, and she fought on as long as she could. It's come out now how badly off the family is, and we're taking up a fund for her.
Elwell? Wait! That was the man Ned told me had helped him with the Blue Star.
That's what he told you, is it?
Well, it's true, isn't it?
Well, it's true, and yet it's... Well, all I can say is that it was business.
I don't understand at all.
Bob Elwell just wasn't smart enough, let's put it that way. It's the kind of thing that happens every day in business.
Mr. Parvis, I think you're trying to tell me nicely that my husband did something dishonorable.
I don't want you getting the wrong idea about Ned. He committed no crime.
What? Exactly did he do?
He went into business with Bob Elwell, and Bob should have been more careful about what he signed.
Why don't you come right out and say that Bob Elwell should never have trusted Ned?
Well, it was Elwell's claim that he came to Ned with the first samples from the Blue Star. You see, the Blue Star had been started and then abandoned. And Elwell believed there was a chance the previous owners had quit too soon.
But he came to my husband with this sample.
That's right. And your husband assayed. They both wanted to keep the whole thing quiet, because if there was any chance the Blue Star was still worth something, well, I don't have to tell you what that would have meant.
And Ned decided that the Blue Star was still a gold mine.
Right. Your husband and Elwell had to buy the Blue Star.
They bought it together?
They did. Elwell borrowed most of the money he put up to purchase the mine.
Well, so far that all seems pretty straightforward.
Uh-huh. Ned had the papers drawn up, and Elwell... Well, he should have read them more carefully.
Why? What did the papers say?
That after Elwell had been paid back for the money he'd invested and received a profit of 5%, the entire ownership of the Blue Star reverted to Ned.
Oh, no.
Well, it was business, Mrs. Boyne. Elwell didn't have to sign it.
Well, evidently his lawyers felt that there was some merit to his claim when he sued Ned recently.
Well, they soon found out they didn't have a leg to stand on.
But if Elwell was so badly off, where did he find the money to hire lawyers?
Well, a lot of people thought Elwell had been treated badly. And his lawyer was one of them.
You mean they took the case for nothing?
On a contingency basis. But when they saw they didn't have a case, they advised Elwell to withdraw the suit. Elwell became despondent and shot himself.
Shot himself? He killed himself because of that?
Well, he didn't kill himself exactly. He dragged on 2 months before he died.
And he tried to kill himself and failed? And then tried again?
No. He didn't have to try again. Well, the newspapers got hold of it, and it's all been raked up again, and this collection thing's been started. You know, most of us back in Waukesha like Bob Elwell. Here's an account of the whole thing from the Sentinel. Maybe it would help you if you looked it over.
From the headline, it would seem the Sentinel knows who's to blame. Widow of Ned Boyne's victim, forced to appeal for aid.
And I thought maybe you might care to...
This picture! This picture! It says this is Robert Elwell.
Yes,
It is.
But this is the man who came for my husband. I mean, I'd know him anywhere.
Mrs. Boyne, I don't think you're very well. Shall I call somebody?
No, this is Robert Elwell. This is the man who spoke to me in the garden.
That can't be the man. It's Robert Elwell.
It was Robert Elwell who came for him.
Came for Ned? Elwell was dead. You know that now, don't you?
Robert Elwell came for him.
No, Mrs. Boyne. Well, surely you remember your husband's unfinished letter to me. It was written after he'd heard of Elwell's death.
Robert Elwell was the man who spoke to me.
That's impossible.
I think I'm mad. I'm not. I'm quite sane. Will you answer me one question, please? When did Robert Elwell try to kill himself?
When?
Yes, the date. Now, please try to remember.
I don't think we should continue this conversation, Mrs. Boyne.
I have a reason for asking.
I'm sure you have, but... Well, I really can't remember. I'd guess about 2 months before he actually died.
I need the exact date.
We might find it in the paper here. Yes, here it is. Last October.
The 20th, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 20th. Then you did know about Elwell all the time.
I know now. Sunday, the 20th. That was the day he came here first.
Came here first?
Yes.
You saw him twice then?
Yes, twice. First on the 20th of October. I remember because that was the day I first discovered the secret staircase. And we saw him from the roof. He was dressed just as he is in the picture in the newspaper. My husband saw him first. He was frightened and ran down ahead of me. But there was no one there. He had vanished.
You say Elwell vanished?
Yes. I see now what happened. He tried to come then, but he wasn't really dead. He couldn't reach us. He had to wait 2 months to die. And then he came back again. And Ned went with him. Oh, good Lord. I sent him to Ned. I told him where to go. I sent him to this room.
That's what they say about the Ling ghost. One never really knows that he's seen the ghost till afterward. Long afterward.
All the doctors at the rest home where they're treating Mrs. Mary Boyne are convinced that she's suffering from an almost historic sense of loss and bereavement because of the inexplicable disappearance of her husband. They're also all convinced that if only they could furnish her with a satisfactory explanation of that disappearance, she would be cured. But of course, we know better. At least, we who believe know that it's the explanation rather than the disappearance that's the root of her trouble. I'll be back in a moment.
When you say that, you said a lot of things nobody else can say.
A lot of things, like Beechwood aging for 100% natural carbonation. That's how the Budweiser people age their beer. Nobody else does it that special way. But then, nobody else is brewing the king of beers. I could tell you a lot of other things about Budweiser and why it's the largest selling beer in the world. But it all comes back to the Budweiser taste, and that speaks for itself. Loud and clear. Hear it talking?
There is no one but one. There's only something left. Because the king of beer is leading all the rest. When you say
Budweiser,
you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch St. Louis. And now, the shortest ghost story in the world. The long, dark, memory-filled corridors of one of the great art museums of the world just before closing time. A man hastens to the exit. He's joined by another art lover. The first man says, "Hey, it's pretty spooky around here at this hour." "Yes," says the second man. "Do you believe in ghosts?" "No," says the first man. "Do you?" "Yes," replies the second, and vanishes. Our cast included Celeste Holm, Larry Haynes, Joan Shea, Guy Sorrell, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Why did you allow her to leave so early?
You and I have to talk.
Well, whatever we say would be beyond her.
Yes, if she's Group 3.
Turn? How could Turn be an inspector?
I suspect Turn, because she's too perfect. Too absolutely Group 3.
But suppose she is an inspector. What have you and I ever said to each other that's reportable?
I am head of repair. You are admiral of the fleet. And we are about to be disenfranchised.
Why?
Carl cannot qualify for Group 1. He will fail the examination.
But you took him to repair yourself. He was judged in perfect balance.
Oh, yes. Because he was examined by a single practitioner, and I was present.
Do you think she's out of balance?
Oh, I know it. He's one of those.
I refuse to believe that.
You refuse to accept it.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
This is KOI in Portland, Music Radio 97. Bill Garrity and the Moonwatch follow CBS News at 12 midnight.
CBS News. The Massachusetts presidential primary was Senator Henry Jackson's first real test, and he made it count. This is Don Kladstrup reporting on the CBS radio network. Jackson, riding anti-busing sentiment and strong labor support, finished first in the packed Democratic race. With 85% of the precincts reporting, Jackson has 23% of the vote. George Wallace and Morris Udall are tied for second with 17%. Jimmy Carter follows with 15. Bringing up the rear were Fred Harris, Sergeant Shriver, Birch Bayh, anti-abortion candidate Ellen McCormick, and Milton Schaap. Birch Bayh, who gleaned only 5% of the vote, meets tomorrow with campaign organizers to reassess his role as a candidate. President Ford, who did not campaign in Massachusetts, won the Republican primary by taking 62% of the vote. Ronald Reagan had 35. President Ford won in Vermont, too. Jimmy Carter captured Vermont's Democratic primary. The results in Massachusetts were something of a setback for Democratic liberals, with perhaps one exception. Jerry Landay reports from Boston.
Though Morris Udall failed to win the Democratic primary, a hope harbored by his organization, he did achieve the minimum objective, consolidating his status as leader of the liberal pack, ahead of Sergeant Shriver, Fred Harris, and Senator Birch Bayh. Udall left an ample separation of about 9 points between himself and his nearest liberal rival, Shriver. Thus, Udall could safely claim a victory of sorts in his speech to supporters in Boston Tuesday night.
It ought to be plain and clear tonight that if the Democrats in 1976 are to have a wider choice than simply Jackson, Wallace, and Carter, then only the Udall campaign offers that choice. This fight is gaining strength. And why it's going on to New York and Wisconsin, and why we'll make it all the way to Madison Square Garden, my friend.
Udall strategists insist their man might well have won the primary had the liberal vote not been fragmented among so many others. If those others drop out, as they're expected to do, Udall will have ample opportunity to demonstrate the strength he claims in the primaries ahead. Jerry Landay, CBS News, Boston.
More news in just a moment.
Hi, world. Denny Bragan here with the super chef, Mike Roy.
That's me. Or I. Take your pick.
A grammarian he ain't. But what's in store for tomorrow on the cook thing, Michael?
Well, dollars and cents of nutrition. Denny has applied to the SOS recipe we had yesterday.
Oh, that same old stuff? You're going to talk more about that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's full of nutrition, it's tasty, it'll save you money, and you can use it a jillion different ways.
You can, huh?
Oh, sure.
All right, friends, tune in for the same old stuff tomorrow on Mike Roy's Cook Thing right here on the CBS Radio Net.
Imagine living without electricity, or indoor plumbing, or food when you're hungry, or clothing when you're cold, or a job when you need money, or a school to get an education. Millions of children around the world don't have to imagine. They live that way. But there is hope, and you're it. By contributing to Save the Children Federation, you can help erase a lifetime of misery. All it takes is a few dollars. Won't you please send your check to Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017.
Three persons are dead following a bomb explosion at the Mason County Jail in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. The dead include a sheriff's deputy and at least two prisoners. Authorities said someone reported seeing a man walk into the jail with a bomb shortly before the explosion. Gun control legislation was dealt a setback Monday when the House Judiciary Committee, bending to strong pressure from the National Rifle Association, voted to send a tough handgun bill back to subcommittee. The move could kill such legislation for the year. The House has approved a bill expanding black lung benefits to coal miners, including automatic awards to persons who work a long time underground, whether they show symptoms of illness or not. Critics say this establishes a bad precedent, the idea that all long-time industrial workers and their dependents are entitled to government-guaranteed pensions. A report from the General Accounting Office has disclosed the Agriculture Department approved $8 million in subsidy overpayments to nine grain companies involved in that 72 Soviet wheat deal. Letters have been sent to the companies demanding repayment. The Accounting Office criticized the Agriculture Department for loose management of the export subsidy program. More CBS News in just a moment.
You're listening to the beginning of something. An automobile commercial? No. As a matter of fact, it's the beginning of a new phase in a man's life. A man who looks different, moves differently, speaks differently, because he was born with cerebral palsy. The new phase in his life began when he started the engine of that car and drove off with his brand new operator's license in his pocket. His name is Joe Elko, man with cerebral palsy, college student, and now automobile driver. It upset some people to see Joe get into that car. In fact, it upset some people to see him at all. That's because they don't understand that although Joe may look different, inside he's no different than anyone else. He and United Cerebral Palsy are looking forward to the day when everyone will understand. In the meantime, Joe joins us in hoping you'll give generously to United Cerebral Palsy. They had a hand in helping him become what he is today, a man with a future.
The State Department says it no longer objects to the sale of two jet airliners to the Soviet-backed government of Angola. The change of policy, said a department spokesman, reflects the changed situation in Angola. It was earlier feared the planes might be used against American-backed factions in Angola's civil war. Don Cladstrup, CBS News.
6 minutes after 12 midnight on Music Radio 97. Good morning, my name's Bill Garrity. This is a Wednesday morning for March 3rd on the Moon Watch. I'll have local news for you at 12:30.